Space Alliance International Podcast.
I don't make this stuff up.
You know, if you put Jesus Christ first, that he'll look after all your bills.
It's not fake. It's faith.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Atheist Alliance International Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Sylvester. Just before we get started, I'd like to remind everyone to please hit that like and subscribe button. And just one other housekeeping note, Atheist Alliance International has been listed by FeedSpot as one of the both the podcast and the blog have been listed as one of the top 10 both podcast and blogs for secularism in the world. So just a shout out to FeedSpot and a recognition to them for listing us in the top 10. So we really appreciate that the work that AAI is doing, both the podcast, the blog, and all the work we do at AAI, especially the Atheist Support Network, is being recognized. So thank you to FeedSpot for that honor. Today we are joined by Reggie, who is with one of our AAI affiliates, Haitian Freethinkers, and he's here to talk to us about what's going on in Haiti. So welcome, Reggie, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, and I appreciate being here.
Okay. All right. So we'd like to start off with, you know, a little introduction to who people are and what they're doing. So just before we got started on the podcast, we were chatting a little bit about beliefs. So can you maybe just tell us a little bit about how you became an atheist, or, like, you know, what you were, you raised Catholic and then became an atheist, or just, you know, brief summary of who you are and your journey?
Okay. Yeah. So my name is Reggie Beloved on Facebook. Reginald Bien-Aimé is the name. So Beloved is the English translation of the last name. So that's how that came about. But yeah, so I was born in Haiti, and then I immigrated to the U.S. in the Miami area when I was about 9 years old. So I grew up in the United States. I was introduced to God by my uncle. And our family was Catholic in nature, but when I came over to the U.S., my mother started taking me to churches, you know, just to go to church. No big deal, pretty normal stuff. And those churches were Protestant. I remember not really noticing a difference because everybody was talking about some of the same things, people, and concepts that I was used to. It wasn't until I was older that I kind of understood that there was a difference between Catholics and Protestants. But anyway, so even as a younger person, I used to remember certain things that would pique my interest. Like in middle school, I had a science teacher. I still remember his name, Ronald Parks, who explain how we had just came on the scene. As far as, like, he pointed to a 12-hour clock and said that humanity just appeared, like, within the next, you know, the last 5 minutes, stuff like that. It kind of talked to, like, he just dropped some information on me. I mean, like, I just thought that, you know, Adam and Eve were, like, was not common, like, the common back story of how humans came to be. But when, you know, when I would go to school, they would teach us science or reality, and then when I go to church, they'll talk about a religion. But, you know, everything didn't really start for me as far as becoming secular until, I would say, 9/11 was a big catalyst, because by that time I had joined the Army, the U.S. Army, as a reservist, as a National Guardsman, to be more specific. And eventually I found myself deployed in the Middle East, where I carried a Bible in my assault pack, and I figured I was going to die in combat. You know, I was an infantryman. And so it dawned on me that I really didn't have an idea what the details of the afterlife was going to be. By that time I had become a Christian by giving my life to Jesus on my own, not because of what my mom made me do. You know, a pastor came over when I was a teenager and basically convinced me to say the Lord's Prayer. Anyway, so I was in the Middle East, I was in Iraq, and then I started reading the Bible because I really wanted to find out what was going to happen when I passed away. So I, you know, started reading the Bible from the beginning. I stopped around Isaiah when we came back to the United States. I requested an audience with the pastor of the church I was attending to discuss some of my concerns. Primary amongst the concerns was that the conquest of Canaan was very disturbing to me, being that I was, you know, a soldier and I didn't want to be, you know, killing people. That was something I was worried about seriously, because I had issues with why we were in the Middle East. And I didn't want to use what I knew was the Nuremberg defense, you know, to anybody, you know, especially, you know, if I were to face God, the ultimate judge, if you will. So, you know, those were some of the issues I was having. Anyway, so during that important meeting with the pastor, I discovered that he was not as knowledgeable about the atrocities in the Bible as I thought he should have been. But at the same time, I said, you know what, I can read. I really don't need a pastor or any theologian per se. So I just kept on researching. And that was back in 2004. And I just kept reading. I just discovered some of the problems with the book and the religion in general. And eventually I started to run to more secular resources who have already, to my surprise at the time, discovered some of the things that I was finding out myself. And, you know, they had better answers to the questions. And around August of 2009, I had a meetup with some local atheists down in South Florida. And that's when I was like, okay, you know what? I could not say in good faith that I'm a believer anymore. So, so I said, that was it. I'm an atheist. I accepted it. And it's been a great ride ever since. I've met lots of people. Obviously, the earthquake happened in 2010 in Haiti. And that was a really, really big moment. And then Pat Robertson made his horrible comments about the founding fathers or the people that started the revolution, essentially making a deal with the devil. You know, I thought that was disgusting on his part, but at the same time, I knew a lot of Haitian believers would have to agree with him because they're Christians. So that kind of helped inspire me to start Haitian Free Thinkers, because I was looking for like-minded Haitian secular people. So at the time, my goal was to find 10 Haitians who were atheist or secular in any kind of way. And, you know, I started a group on Facebook. We've been doing it for 12 years now. Started in January of 2012. And yeah, so that's how the group started. So with Atheist Alliance International, it's just an opportunity to network some more with people from all over the world who have their personal stories, but really like focus on their, I guess you could say, indigenous populations, in trying to educate and be like good, positive ambassadors of what it is that secular people like myself and them understand about religion, whether it's Christianity or whatever religions that they come from. And so that's really what I do in the secular space, and I'm very passionate about it. And I'm so pleased to have the opportunity to kind of discuss that, my personal journey, and anything else related to those things.
Okay, so it was the earthquake and the sort of the reaction from people like Pat Robertson. That's what prompted you to found the Haitian Freethinkers, was the what happened in the aftermath of the earthquake. Plus, obviously, what had happened before as well.
But. Yes. It's, you know, after I became an atheist, you know, it's kind of like I started to go to as many local events at first and then national events. I went to like 2 Day of Reason rallies in DC, and it's always good to kind of see, you know, people from everywhere and, you know, trying to find people that are kind of like coming from your background is something I think a lot of people gravitate towards. So, yeah, and that, you know, and then of course the earthquake happened and I really wanted to do something to help out. You know, when I started Haitian Feet Thinkers, I just wanted to do something, and I did like some really rudimentary videos on YouTube explaining how earthquakes actually happen, because I was not aware of how many people knew in Haiti and Creole about plate tectonics, you know. So earthquakes are a natural phenomena. We know what causes them, how they're caused, and it's not caused by what Pat Robertson thinks. It's caused by, you know, natural forces. And, you know, it dawned on me at the time, like, wait, you know, I know that, but I don't know if my mom knows that. I don't know if my uncle and my auntie and whoever else that speak Creole who may not have the opportunity to go to take courses specific to the earth sciences know that. So I did a little video explaining that, and that's, like I said, my passion. So I'm here.
Okay. So it started basically with a video to explain things to people. So, and so what's the following like with Haitian Freethinkers? Have you got a fairly large number of members, or it's, you know, there's most of the people in Haiti are religious and you have just a handful, or what's the situation like?
So the group is primarily on Facebook. So I have to use their matrix. The group is about, I think last check, like about 600 members. But when I first started the group, it was the first time I was doing something like that. So I had like a open policy, like the group was not closed, like it is now. It's not a public group. So I was like, you know, I was asking people for referrals. And so surely we got people to join. Now, and I think this is true of a lot of groups, like some people are more active than others. So that's that. Not an actual people in Haiti who get it, you know, are good fits. I have, I would say, 6 to 7. Now that doesn't mean that there's not more out there, but I've met people, I've spoken to them, you know, I've supported Billy, for example. He's a member who had a group, because, you know, I thought I was the only one. You know, you hear that a lot. I thought I was the only one, and I met Billy, who had a group in Haiti, but, you know, because of the situation, the hardships that he was facing, you know, he had to stop. But after the second earthquake that happened a few years ago now, you know, my Haitian Feet Thinkers, along with the Foundation Beyond Belief, we raised some money to send to Billy. So we've done some activism on that end. So I would say that I know of about 5 to 7 people in Haiti that get it. It's just that you really at that point, it's really just about communicating more and getting through the language barrier, or, you know, as I'm more English-based when I speak and I think and I express my ideas, than anything else. I've looked forward to actually going to Haiti. Again, I haven't been since, I think 2008 was the last time I've been there, to kind of meet up with some of those members, some of those people. But because of security issues, there are nagging us, especially in the capital, I just haven't had that opportunity yet. So I'm looking forward to doing stuff like that and maybe engaging people on the ground over there to get that firsthand experience. So
it's only 6 to 7, so not a lot, but surely there's more out there. So the video you did on the earthquake, did you do that in English, or you mentioned the language barrier? So did you the video in the native language, or you did that one in English?
I did it in Haitian Creole. If you probably search earthquake Creole, something like that, it should pop up. I believe it's done in the Haitian Freethinkers YouTube page, which I started many, many years ago. I just have to put in the work. And, you know, I had to decide whether to produce stuff original from me or just learn how I could possibly translate some things that are already out there. But that was the origin of everything, to explain to people that earthquakes have a natural explanation. It's not something supernatural.
What, and maybe you don't know, you said you haven't been there. It was 2008, you said, correct? That was the last time you were there. It's been more recently than that, so a little over five, six years ago professionally, I was working with a company that was supplying solar power battery chargers for lights and phones and things like that to a company in Haiti, because the infrastructure was so bad that they would have, they had like the boxes, you know, there was like maybe the, oh, how big was it? It's like maybe 1 foot wide by maybe a foot and a half tall. So it had like solar cells and like it had like little USB ports, had lights on it. You could plug your phone in to charge it, that kind of thing, you know, so kids could at least do their homework. So this was about six years ago. So like, what is the infrastructure like in Haiti for people to be able to have one, electricity, and two, internet, to be able to find Haitian free thinkers and watch videos? I mean this was obviously, it's been several years now, so they've had much more time to rebuild that shattered infrastructure. But I'm just curious, maybe our listeners are curious as well, like how do you get information out to people where both electricity and internet access are very poor?
Yeah, that's a great question. Based on personal experience, the infrastructure is definitely in a poor state compared to what I'm used to here in the United States. However, I remember something I'll never forget. That was a shoe shiner that I saw myself. He was shining shoes in the streets, and he had a cell phone, an old flip phone from back in the day. And so that left that impression on me that, you know, someone of his status could have a cell phone. And to me, that says that people understand that cell phones are very necessary. And so even though your prototypical infrastructure is not where it should be, it needs to be, a lot of people have cell phones, which is why the solar thing comes in handy. And so I'm able to contact my family, and the younger generation especially are savvy to, you know, using some of the resources that we all know, social media, everything. It's just now, I think, you know, making it more steady as far as having electricity so that they don't have to rely on those solar things, but also having the mind state, I think, if they were to want to look up information that's available. So the only thing I don't know is if I were to be like a fly on the wall and I just kind of tag along to see, you know, what from what is available, what are they doing with the information, you know? And my guess would be to deal with whatever issues that they're having. You know, obviously, like I said, power is a major issue. I don't know what people are doing with what the resources they have as far as looking up things to, I don't know, improve whatever situation that they're in. But yeah, it's definitely not where it is in the, like, compared to the United States as far as infrastructure. Last time I was there, it was like rolling blackouts where they would have certain days where you would get power depending on where you are in the grid. And besides that, you know, you're like left in the dark. So a lot of people have to buy generators. That's a very popular thing. And then with the influx of solar inventions, that's something else that I think a lot of people use to supplement their needs. But I think a lot of people, especially younger people, have cell phones and they have access to the internet so that they can kind of connect with the world and see what's going on.
Yeah, so there is infrastructure, but it's limited at times. So, and I imagine, like, outside of the main cities, like in very rural areas, electricity and internet is probably even less available.
I would say that probably is a good guess. You know, I'm from Port-au-Prince. I'm more used to, you know, even though I haven't been there for a long time, so what's going on in the capital. But I mean, you see stuff, you know, like, I mean, people have it, but like at a lower scale, definitely. Because with the advent of cell phones, now you basically, I think Haiti has a more prepaid model still, as far as how you get data. So you pay for blocks of data, and then that's, if you're outside the capital, I'm assuming there's less towers, so it's, you know, probably less. I think that's a good, that would be a good way to describe the current situation. But again, I think if you were to see how the younger generation does business, they tend to have more savviness, more connectivity than their senior counterparts. So,
yeah, and we're seeing that demographically around the world, that the younger generation are pretty much none in their religious belief. So of the 6 to 7 that you guys have at Haitian Freethinkers, is there a spectrum in ages, or they're all fairly young, or any, you know, they're all over the place, old, young, middle-aged?
I would say middle age. So I'm 44, Billy's probably in his 40s, and then the other members are like 30s and stuff like that. But again, I think that's not necessarily representative of what's going on over there. So me doing learning, like how to leverage, for example, Instagram, I placed ads in Instagram to see if I can get members that way, not necessarily to join Haitian Freethinkers, the Facebook group, just to garner any interest to see where I'm at. You know, leveraging social media, so something that the younger generation is much more acquainted at. And I was able to get some interest, but it's really hard to communicate ideas, I think, through that medium, especially if you're not communicating with people. But yeah, you're going to get a lot of younger people that kind of get it and are savvy, even with the limitations that they have in Haiti. And I think that's mostly due to the advent of cell phones and internet, and just kind of like seeing what's going on around them, and maybe asking very very natural questions like, well, how can we have this powerful, all loving source, and yet, you know, here's our condition? You know, I think that's a very normal question to ask anywhere, whether you're in Haiti or the United States. So I think that's
historically, I want to say 1750, 1755, around that time, there was a massive earthquake in Lisbon that happened on a Sunday, and it shook so many people's faith. Like, it was and forgive the viewers watching if I get this wrong, it's been a while since I read up on it. It was actually one of the big, from some scholar I was reading, was speculating that this massive earthquake actually contributed to the Enlightenment of the late 1700s, because how could a loving God on a Sunday send this massive earthquake, which I believe also triggered a tsunami as well, which just devastated Lisbon, you know? And it was, it made a lot of people stop and question their faith. So I think maybe you're right that there's probably more going on in Haiti, but just the limitations of the infrastructure is just making it harder to find these people. But, you know, as we know that the younger generation don't tend to believe it. Demographically, Haiti is a majority Catholic country, correct?
Yes.
But are we seeing in Haiti, like in other countries, are we seeing a drop off in, excuse me, are we seeing a drop in religious affiliation across the board? Or people, I know, in Central and South America, Catholicism is losing ground to evangelicals and Pentecostals. Are we seeing something similar happening in Haiti?
I am not 100% sure, because I want to be on the ground to kind of get a feel firsthand, because otherwise I'm just getting information from different sources. I would assume that's the same case. Obviously, because of the social political challenges that are going on, people are more concerned about survival and what's going to happen tomorrow. But when you go to the religious space, I think the Catholic lead is dwindling. There's a lot of charismatic Protestant types that are, you know, having like what would be the equivalent of the mega churches. This is coming from my cousins, you know. So the Protestant side is definitely trying to make inroads. Some of your common denominations that I'm sure you know about, the Mormons. I remember Mormons even when I was young, like 5 years old, and they stood out because of their uniform, a white shirt. They were white. And they rode bicycles. And so, you know, that's always there. The Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, the proselytizing types have been making progress because they proselytize. The lead that the Catholics have mostly have to do with our history, being that the colonizers were Catholic. And once we gained independence, I heard this was from another gentleman who really like was a big resource who came from Haiti. Now he lives in the United States. He told me that the government made a contract of sorts with the Catholic Church, where the Catholic Church essentially had carte blanche to like handle the education of the people for like 100 years. And so that's how come they got their lead. But you know, the Protestants are definitely making a progress. And of course, the indigenous religions, the voodoos of the world, the reason why they're not more represented is because we as Haitians were taught, at least when I grew up, you know, that this was an evil thing, it was a bad thing. So again, I feel like maybe if there was a lot more pride in that, you know, that we kind of owned our ancestral everything, that, you know, those numbers would be much more represented. And then comes us, my demographic. I'm trying to kind of get an idea, and I want to like get a better answer by going there and talking to people. But I do believe it's going to be a similar trajectory for just like the South America, that, you know, they're losing ground because that's just the way things are going all over the world.
Yeah. So did you go to church when you still lived in Haiti? You said you moved to the U.S. when you were young and started going to church. So did you attend church while you were still living there as a young child?
Yes, I remember being introduced to the concept of God in a church because my uncle was taking me to, we had to line up and go to take the communal wafer. I'll never forget that. I had my communion in Haiti, which was a big deal. That's, you know, there was no separation of church and state that I'm aware of. I went to a private school. So yeah, I went to church, and you know, everything was, you know, first of all, I was young, and two, everybody was kind of doing the same thing, so I didn't think nothing of it. You know, when we left Haiti right after, Duvalier II, the younger, the son, got deposed, and he went to France. Yeah, baby doc. So we came to the U.S. like not too long after that, and then like I said, my mother took me to churches here in the United States, in Miami, and just continued. As I grew up, she kind of let me do my thing as far as I go to different churches with friends, and that's how I kind of started to compare and contrast different things. But never thinking at the time that I was going to be a secular ambassador, if you will. But yeah, so that's how everything started.
I imagine a lot of people in our community, myself included, like I went to church up until I left home and went off to university and then started sleeping in on Sundays and just kind of lost interest from there. But I would imagine a lot of former believers never saw themselves becoming like these secular advocates. But it's funny, like, and you've probably encountered it. I'm sure pretty much all of us do. You know, when we say we used to believe, and then when you're talking to a current believer, like, yeah, I used to believe, and now I'm an atheist, like, oh, well, you weren't a real Christian, or something, you must have had a negative experience. I'm like, no, you know, I'm not Catholic, so I wasn't molested by a priest. You know, I actually enjoyed the fellowship of going to Sunday school and seeing my friends and hanging out for an hour and, like, you know, coffee and biscuits after the sermon. So you know, I did not have a negative experience, just like you. So, you know, reading about the conquest and just like, you know, the 2 + 2 does not equal 4 when you're reading the Bible. It's just like the atrocities, the genocide, the rape, the slavery, that just, how could you call this a moral book? So yeah, totally get that, you know, you didn't see this one coming. So I don't think any of us did.
So I want to touch on something that you mentioned that happened to me. Like, just like you said, I went to Calvary Chapel down in South Florida. I'll never forget. There was a Messianic Jew named Paul, who has since passed away. So may he rest in peace, I guess. But Paul was the first person who told me to my face that all the work that I've done when I was a believer, and I was not a real Christian. And I remember feeling like it was like a gut punch. It was so disrespectful, and I could not, but he didn't. I just met this guy. But he's telling me that, like you said, that I wasn't the real thing. And I remember feeling like, what? I've done so much work, for the lack of a better term. Yeah, I mean, when you're a believer, like, who's going to know, you know, your prayer life? You know, what you sacrificed for God, you know, because I've done those things, you know, those things that you know, like, I was a big believer in doing good things, but not broadcasting it. So, you know, so that was very, 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 I really didn't like what he said. But there's a lot of people that do think that, you know, our journey was not legit. Yet I know more than they do.
Yep.
And it's kind of like, I don't know, that really like bothered me. But now I know that that's just a natural defense and they cannot accept.
I get that a lot from, you know, like I just like, you know, Christianity or whatever religion is like, it's so important to your life. Why do I know more about it than you do? You know, and it drives me nuts. You know, mm-hmm. like my wife is from a Buddhist culture, but, you know, she's nominally Buddhist, but she doesn't really practice it. Like, you know, she might nod her head at a temple or something, but, you know, her brother doesn't believe in God. But, you know, I know more about Buddhism than she does. You know, just because I research and I write on all these topics, and it's funny to me that atheists know more about the Bible than the Christians do. So it's just funny. I think it's rather ironic, but I think that's part of what led to our journey to freedom. And freedom of thought is, you know, this doesn't make any sense. This is nuts.
So. Very true. Not only that, but I think I've come to realize that their ignorance is actually a strength. It is a strength of them staying believers. I think that's why, you know, the Catholic Church fought so hard not to have the Bible popularized, to keep it cloaked in that secrecy where they're the ones that are dispensing the information, you know. Mm-hmm. And ironically, the more it became popular, you know, that's why they say, like, oh, it's the most popular book of all time. You know, it's become, you know, it's a little relic. You know, it's something that you keep on your dresser. It's that thing to say, like, yo, I have one of those things. You know, it's really like a dictionary, really. You only go there to kind of reference a thing or two. But, yeah, it's their ignorance is what keeps them in there. 2 + 2. Anyway, it makes no sense. And that's what keeps them educated. I tell people the only difference between me and them is that I just know. Period.
Yeah. Well, you made a good point. Like, I'm a writer, and I have my own YouTube channel where I'm doing short little summaries of my book that I'm working on and that I write. And I'm actually the video that I'm actually working on today is about the people in the past who translated Bibles into English, to German, to Bohemian, and like the outcry of the Catholic Church, like, how dare you translate this into a language that people could understand? Because then we can't stand behind the smoke and mirrors like the Wizard of Oz and like speak in Latin and no one knows what we're saying, you know. So it's very much you're dead on when you say the Catholic Church fought Bibles in local languages, because that's exactly what the video I'm working on right now. So
excellent. And to piggyback off that, to show you the why what we talked about earlier about language and culture is so important, and the Bible. So I remember the first time picking up a physical copy of the Haitian Creole Bible, and as somewhat of a native speaker, I can see where the translators making choices in their translation not to arouse the Creole speaker, if that makes sense. So if let's say if English was the base language, let's say, you know, the Hebrew or the Koine Greek, and you happen to know Hebrew and Koine Greek, and you now are trying to read the Bible in, let's say, Haitian Creole or English, you can see they're making choices because, you know, different words can be used. You know, you can write the same thing in different ways. And I was like, wait a minute. Why did they choose this word instead of something more more violent, more sexual, you know?
Yeah.
And so a lot of people there are, was a monoglot, single language speakers, would not appreciate when, let's say, a Jew is telling the Christian, like, hey, your stuff is wrong. Here, let me show you. It's wrong. It's not Alma. It's Bethula. Is it Bethula, not Alma? You know, let me show you where it's wrong. You're wrong. And to this day, the Christians are like, I don't care. And this information is public. You know, we have interlinear tools. Was it Biblios? I don't know if you know about that. You know, you can compare. I mean, it's all out there. But, you know, at the end of the day, some people just don't care.
They don't want to know. It's they fear. My personal view is they're unwilling to admit that what they believe is bullshit because the whole fabric of their life will unravel. Right? There's, was it, I'm going to paraphrase the philosopher Dan Dennett. There's no polite way to tell people they've devoted their life to a delusion. So,
well,
they just said. They don't want it. So, yeah, cool. All right. Well, any other topics you want to bring up, or you ready to wrap it up?
No topics. I'm just glad to be here. It's been a while coming. I appreciate your time. I know that it's late. Where you are, it's really where I am. But like I said, this had to be done because I'm passionate. And if anybody sees this in the future, you know, I'm very accessible. You could just type Reggie Beloved or Haitian Free Thinkers. Everything that comes up, you know, is a way to reach me. You know, we have all the social media things that you can ever think of, you know, YouTube, Facebook, the whole nine. But it's all about being positive ambassadors. It's all about helping those underrepresented groups to know that there's people out there doing the work. We may not have the large platforms yet, but it's very, very important to kind of like find representation and kind of like speak in the local language and make people understand that, hey, you know, we get it. And whatever concerns that they have, you know, we try to meet them wherever it is. And it's not just for me about converting people. Just making sure they understand that, hey, we exist. Just existing is a big, big thing. And so that's what I try to do. So I really appreciate your time. I know it's late, and hopefully we get to do it another time.
Sure. And thanks for your time too. Just as when this video does go live, what is the English level in Haiti? Like, do most people, can most people speak English in Haiti, or Creole is they're like monolinguists?
Again, you'll find a higher level of English understanding people in the younger generations, but the lingua, official language is still French. That's how French. We were taught. So French on paper, but English in, Creole in reality, right? So, and we're still struggling to make Creole the, not just official language on paper, but transition over to, that's how we teach. That's how we, you know, pass along information on paper because French dominates. And then English and Spanish are popular because Haiti's close to the United States. We have lots of family members in the English-speaking world. And in Spanish, because of our neighbor, the Dominican Republic, even though we're having issues with them. So I would say English and Spanish come in third. But if that person speaks English, it's probably because they're younger, because I don't think it's taught in school still, you know, but so I would say, yeah, that's how you'll find it. If the person speaks French, they went to school. If they speak Creole, they're just your average Haitian. If they speak English and or Spanish, they've taken the time to kind of educate themselves. So that's how I would describe it.
So some of the younger generation who tend to be non-believers, and maybe find this video and watch it and maybe reach out to you, join your group. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Well, really appreciate your time. It was great talking to you and hearing about your journey, especially like being in the army and reading the Bible and like the Canaan, like how that like troubled your conscience. So it's nice to hear your story and appreciate your time.
Yes. So thank you for everything. And you guys have a really, really wonderful day and continue. It's worth it.
Well, thanks for coming on. And just before we sign off, once again, I'd like to remind everybody to please like and subscribe. In the description, you'll find the Facebook link to Reggie's group, Haitian Freethinkers. So please go check them out. And thanks, everybody, for watching. And we'll see you on the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks for listening, and don't forget we're on YouTube, so follow us on YouTube. Just search for Atheist Alliance International and please subscribe and hit that notification bell. We're also on all of your favorite podcast platforms, so make sure that you follow us on there as well. See you next time.